This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Today on Upfront, a Nigerian presidential candidate talks to us about his plans for the country's youth.
Nigerians know that we want to change the status quo. Everything we've done from the beginning, from the way we organize our party, a party that doesn't want to change will not take a first-timer like me.
That is Nigerian presidential candidate Adewale Adebayo. Rwandan authorities arrested a young woman over what they say is indecent dressing after a photo of her in a fishnet attire at a concert appeared on social media.
Lilian Mugabekazi's arrest has forced the Rwandan government and the national police to completely tame indecent dressing under the reference of Law Article 143. This has hence caused public outrage on social media, with many condemning the government for violating women's rights, while others argued for more decent dressing in public.
We have those stories and more coming up right here on Upfront. But first, as always, we want to hear from you, our listeners. And our question of the week is, what financial lessons did you learn from the COVID-19 pandemic about saving money, your personal savings?
Still, I'm Tabari Apple. And now, if we talk about the lesson that I've learned in this COVID-19, the first thing, I'm meant to save more than the way I've been doing. Yeah, and I'm meant to invest more of my money in other things rather than only depending on my education and teaching, yeah? So that right now, as I see the lesson I've learned, I'm going to start my farm for poultry when I start like this working, yeah.
Yeah, personally, I've learned that we need to save when we're working from now on, that we need to know that something else, not even corona or anything else, can happen, that we need to have a saving culture.
I've just learned that really, as you work, you always need to have some money aside to wait for emergencies, because if I hadn't done that, maybe it would have been worse.
And many thanks to you, all our listeners, who sent in your responses to our weekly question. Now, this June, Nigerians celebrated Democracy Day to commemorate 22 years of peaceful transfers of power without interference from the military. And to mark the occasion, Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari promised that next year's presidential elections would be free, safe, and transparent. And as Nigerians prepare to head to the polls next February, that is for the seventh time since the return to multi-party democracy in 1999, they are being courted by a number of candidates vying for the top office, hoping to succeed President Buhari. They include a number of candidates, including Lagos Governor Bola Tinubu of the ruling All Progressives Congress, that is APC party, and the former Vice President Atiku Abubakar from the main opposition People's Democratic Party, PDP. These two major candidates will be competing for votes with other candidates, including Prince Adewale Adebayo of the Social Democratic Party, that's the party of the late Chief Mashood Kayode Abiola, who many believe was the undeclared winner of the annulled elections in June of 1993. And as Nigerians struggle with the impact of the global pandemic and rising food and fuel prices, Prince Adebayo tells me that Nigerians are looking to change the political status quo, and that next year's election will be a referendum on Buhari's term in office and will likely be one of the most significant in Nigeria's post-independence political history.
Let's talk about your political platform. What would you say are some of the main problems facing Nigeria right now, and how do you plan to fix them?
So what I'm running on is the same platform of farewell to poverty. Unfortunately for the country, the poverty has gotten worse over three decades now. And now on top of that, we have insecurity. So this time around, we're running on hope again, 2023, a farewell to poverty and insecurity.
Okay.
But in 1993, it was farewell to poverty.
But now it's poverty and insecurity.
Insecurity, yes.
Okay. And Nigeria has been suffering or struggling with endemic corruption for many years. And the name is synonymous with corruption when you say Nigeria, whether it's in Nigeria or outside here. Why has it been difficult for the successive governments to to get rid of corruption, to fight corruption?
We see Nigeria as a people are synonymous with many good things. It is the government that has been synonymous with corruption. And why they have not been able to change is because they haven't changed. So when you change the government, an administration, you just recycle the same people. So they will not change their behavior, even though they just reshuffle themselves, because you have a four-year term, so you need to leave, but a version of you comes back. So what Nigerians are trying to do now is the only way to kick corruption out of the country, because you cannot kick poverty, and you cannot kick insecurity unless you kick corruption. And the way to kick corruption is to kick those who are corrupt out of government.
Mm.
So that's what we are trying to do in 2023.
And how do you convince Nigerians that you're the man for the job, that you're the one who's going to solve the issue of corruption and insecurity in this case, that you will not be the same cookie cutter politician who asks for their votes, take the power, and then forget about them?
I think they know that already, because in all these years, we've not partaken in the corruption of the government. We've not joined them. We've not supported them. We've not been their back carrier. Many of the people you see succeeding them today have been part of the system. We are completely different. We're from the people. So Nigerians know that. And our messaging is very clear. We know that the problems of Nigeria are human-made problems. Nigeria, ordinarily, the way it's designed, is not supposed to have any problem. Everything works in the country. Every resource you can use to develop yourself is there. The human capacity is also there. And with all of these opportunities for the country, it's unfortunate that the only malaise that the country has is bad governance. So the people know that this is the reason why we are running. If we were part of the system, we should have been part of the system all this while. There is nothing wrong in the system from the point of view of those who are inside it. It's only those who are outside, like me, that see something wrong in the system. Mm-hmm. And if you see the behavior of the ruling party, the APC, and the party they took over from, the SDP, PDP, you will see that even as they are behaving today, they behave as if nothing is wrong. The whole world can see that Nigeria is going the wrong direction, the country is carrying into a ditch of some sort, but they can't see it, because that's the only thing they know is politics of doubling your money. So you come into the government, you support someone to come in, and it's now you're part of the gravy train, and you continue to loot the country the more. So it's now the young people, the outsiders, the third force, are coming together to try to push a new narrative, to push an ordinary person into the government, and we can now from within actually throw away the system. If we don't throw away the system, you can give the country 1,000 years, nothing is going to change.
This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. We are chatting with Nigerian presidential candidate Prince Adewale Adebayo of the Social Democratic Party. Many know it as the party of the late Chief Mashood Kayode Abiola, who many believe was the undeclared winner of the annulled elections in June 1993. That was June 12th, 1993. Mr. Adebayo, joining me here in studio, is running to be Nigeria's next president. I asked him if Nigerians are actually ready to change the political status quo.
Nigerians know that we want to change the status quo. Everything we've done from the beginning, from the way we organize our party, a party that doesn't want to change will not take a first-timer like me. My political party has an opportunity to take any of the big wigs of the political system,
the career politician.
And try to win easily. But we thought that it's better to start afresh, it's better to go to the people, it's better to do the long work. But when you get to power, the lives of the people will change for good.
Are you worried that being a newcomer, a non-career politician, just like, you know, the late Mashood Abiola yourself, you probably find or meet the same challenges that he met?
We're already meeting the challenges. The only difference is that right now, Nigerians have had 30 years to test the status quo. So the people are on our side. And the people, even in 1993, the people were on the side of the SDP, and it was the side of MK Abiola. He won overwhelmingly. He won the majority of the states in the country. But at that time, it was a military rule, and for some reason, it was easy for the military to just use power and muzzle power, and the people resisted over the years, and the country went sanctioned by almost every international organization. But this time around, we are dealing with a civilian government that has behaved badly in government. They don't have the capacity to stop the people like the military did. And what they can do is to try to deceive the people. Mm. And the people have been so deceived that they who are deceiving the people have run out of tricks. Just even before they say anything, the people already know that these people are just coming to deceive us. And they're trying to kill behind us. So our challenge is to actually take advantage of the time that we have to put good policies in place so that when people support us as they're supporting us and we get into government, they will not be disappointed in the slightest of ways, because Nigerians have had 62 years of serious disappointment, and I think we should put a stop to that.
Now, in 2020, thousands, if not millions, of young Nigerians, Nigeria is one of the youngest countries on the continent, took to the streets to protest police brutality. The NSAS, the hashtag NSAS movement that captured the world attention. What is your view on how the government responded to the demands of these young people?
The government did not respond like a government. The government responded like an enemy. And that's, in the first place, the protest shouldn't have taken place at all, because what the young people were asking for was very basic. Decent policing, justice, rule of law. Typically, in a civilized society, it is the government that preaches rule of law and law and order. But in the case of Nigeria, the most lawless entity is the government. So it is even the ordinary people reminding the government of law and order, that your police should not brutalize people. Your police should not set people up. They should not plant contrabands in people's bags and all of that. They should not confiscate people's property without trial. And those things, when a government is told about those things, a proper government will look into it. The kids are not supposed to be on the street for so long for such a basic rational demand. But the government is incapable of behaving like a government. And that's the problem. So the government did not respond well, and many of the young people now are in our party. In fact, the largest branch of our party is Lagos State, and the chairman of Lagos State was the head of the NSAS in Lagos at that time. So we are now channeling that energy from protesting on the street to actually putting the wrong government out of power.
That was Nigerian presidential candidate Prince Adewale Adebayo of the Social Democratic Party. You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
Welcome back. You're listening to Upfront on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Let's go to East Africa in Rwanda, where authorities arrested a young lady, charging her with being indecently dressed after photos of her dressed in a fishnet dress appeared on social media. If convicted, the 24-year-old faces 6 months to 2 years in prison. From Kigali, Rwanda, Diana Iriza brings us this report.
Lilian Mugabekazi's arrest has forced the Rwandan government and the national police to completely tame indecent dressing under the reference of Law Article 143. This has hence caused public outrage on social media, with many condemning the government for violating women's rights, while others argued for more decent dressing in public. Speaking to a cross-section of citizens in Rwanda, this is what they had to say in regards to this matter.
Before arresting, prosecuting people on the basis of how they dress, we have to ensure the law itself is clear, because the Article 143 of the law that determines offenses and penalties in general is vague, because it does not define what is public indecency. So what is indecent for me may not be indecent for someone else. You cannot jail, you cannot arrest, prosecute people just because they decided to dress this way or that way, because there is no standard definition of what is decent.
No, it is not a new law. This is this offense has been provided for since 2018, and even with the penal code that came before that in 2012, these offenses were there. Glad that the court found it not necessary for her to be provisionally detained for now. So I understand she was released, which is a good thing. And then we shall be looking forward to see how the main hearing on the case's merits will be unfolding, and also the decision of the court, which will be a landmark case to some extent, which will determine the dress code of women, how much skin they can be allowed to expose.
I don't think if a woman dress a transparent or short dress, it is against our culture or it is against the law, because we don't have that law.
Rwandans via social media urged the Ministry of Gender and Family Promotion and the Ministry of Youth and Culture, in partnership with the local government, to sensitize and create awareness of indecent dressing at the grassroots level in Rwanda in order to avoid future problems of the same nature. Diana Iriza for VOA in Kigali, Rwanda.
I reached Diana Iriza in Kigali, Rwanda for more on this story.
So I wanted to ask you, in terms of this case, is this the first of its kind in the country? Has this happened before? Has anybody been arrested for indecent dressing?
Yeah, this is the very first time this is happening. We have never had any cases like this where someone is being arrested for what they're wearing. We Rwandans, we are known for and also used to wearing whatever we want and moving freely.
So did this surprise you, or did this surprise a lot of people that somebody was arrested for what they wore to a concert?
Yes, it surprised many people in so many different ways. For some people, it was the fact that she was arrested for what she's wearing. To other people, the way she was dressed surprised them. And some people, they believe she wasn't indecently dressed. Everybody has the right to... There isn't really a specific definition of what someone should wear, really. So people were surprised in so many different ways, like the reaction of the police, the new law that just came up. Yeah, people are really surprised in so many different ways.
So what does the law actually say about how one should dress?
So the law is not very clear about... what one should wear and or what one shouldn't wear. The only thing the law states is indecency, acts of indecency, dressing up indecently is prohibited in the country, and anyone who dresses indecently or anyone who gets involved or participates in indecent acts will be punished for it. That's what the law states. So this has also led to a lot of confusion, because people are like, they need to explain what exactly they mean by indecent dressing. You know, how do they measure indecent dressing? They need to be specific and make the law clear on what they mean by indecent dressing.
Okay, so in terms of the statute, there's nothing very specific about
talking about how one should be dressed and who makes the judgment call on whether one is indecent dressed or not. But I'm very interested in how the social media users in Rwanda, especially on Twitter, reacted to this and amplified the story. How did the authorities or police respond to social media users' reaction?
Yes, so honestly, with social media, you could see that there's a lot of outrage on this issue. So many women, just like you mentioned, came out and they were very vocal about this issue and they were very angry. And everyone had their own opinion to share. And it wasn't just women, really. It was men, too. They were like, this is very unfair. And one thing they pointed out is that her arrest and the law that came about based on indecent dressing was directed to women indirectly. We don't have any men being arrested. There's been so many photos for so many years, men, you know, with bare chests on social media, but they've never been arrested. But a woman dresses the way that lady dressed and she's being arrested. So many women felt like this law and the arrest is something that is being set up to violate women's rights.
So there's also women
were not okay with that.
So basically talking about a double standard here.
There was a lot of double standards.
Diana, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us.
Thank you too.
That was reporter Diana Iriza speaking to me from Kigali, Rwanda. You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. Now, the World Food Program says that half the population of Ethiopia's Tigray region needs food aid after nearly 2 years of civil war. Aid agencies said that Ethiopia's federal authorities are limiting aid to the region, which the head of the World Health Organization calls the worst humanitarian disaster in the world. Henry Wilkins reports from Addis Ababa.
On Friday, the UN's World Food Programme, WFP, said nearly half of Tigray's estimated 7 million people are in need of food aid. It also said that a fuel embargo on the region is hampering distribution of the aid that gets in. The news comes after Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the head of the UN's World Health Organization, WHO, and an ethnic Tigrayan, made international headlines asserting that the humanitarian crisis taking place in the region is the worst in the world. The crisis in Tigray, he said, is worse than Ukraine, without any exaggeration, and suggested the neglect may have to do with the colour of Tigrayan people's skin. Aside from claims of neglect internationally, the Ethiopian government has been accused of imposing a humanitarian blockade on Tigray, where pro-government forces have been fighting the rebel Tigrayan People's Liberation Front, the TPLF, since November of 2020. William Davidson is an analyst for the International Crisis Group, a research organisation based in Belgium.
The federal government clearly needs to take action urgently to restore the services, and if there need to be discussions with the authorities in Tigray about the logistics and legalities of how that's done, then those talks should be held. But this dispute should in no way prevent the convening of peace talks to try and reach a permanent ceasefire.
At a news conference Thursday, Bilene Seyum, an Ethiopian federal government representative, said some aid is reaching the Tigray region's capital.
Thus far, for the Tigray region, above 29,000 or close to 30,000 metric tons of food, 31,940 metric tons of non-food items, 300 million birr, above 66,000 liters of fuel, 23.63 metric tons of medicine, 2,096 metric tons of fertilizer have reached Mekelle for distribution to beneficiaries throughout the region.
Humanitarian organizations say this aid is not enough to prevent famine-like conditions in some parts of the region. The national government has said it is ready for unconditional peace talks with the TPLF, which could lead to restoration of aid and services. However, a TPLF representative, Fesaha Askahedum Tesema, says the government is using the prospect of restored aid to force an end to hostilities. He told VOA,
"The Abiy government in Addis is its latest position, as you know, is that direct negotiations has to come first. That is, we have to have a direct negotiation and then agreed on a ceasefire. Of course, if that materializes, if there is a positive outcome, they will resume the services. That is as conditional as you can get.
On Thursday, the TPLF reported that the government attacked its troops in Tigray in violation of a humanitarian ceasefire which has been in place since March. The government denied the accusation. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. And let's go to South Africa, where workers are holding protests nationwide against the rising cost of living. The protests are taking place as South Africa hits its highest rate of inflation since 2009. Vicky Stark reports from Cape Town.
Thousands of workers took to the streets in all nine provinces to demand, among other things, a basic income grant, a better minimum wage, and a cap on fuel prices and interest rates. They also want the ongoing problems with the state-owned supplier of electricity, Eskom, to be resolved so that businesses stop losing work due to power cuts. Azar Jamin, the chief economist at consultancy firm Econometrics, says the July inflation rate of 7.8% was expected.
The main causes, obviously, have been the steep increase in fuel prices at the beginning of July and the continuing rise in food prices as a result of the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the halting of food exports from the latter until recently, which pushed up food commodity prices globally.
Jamin says the $88 basic income grant demanded by the Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU, and the South African Federation of Trade Unions, SAFTU, is unrealistic.
It's a path to total catastrophe in a very short space of time if we were to succumb to the kind of basic income grant that they're looking for, which would cost 400 billion rand extra per year. Let us rather just live with the kind of social grants that we already have, which are more magnanimous and widespread than is the case with most other countries.
Economist Lebohang Peko, a senior research fellow at the Trade Collective Research Group, disagrees.
My question is, can we afford not to? I think the notion of a basic income which is able to deal with things like hunger at household level and at childhood level, which has other impacts like stunting, like cognitive functioning at a very crucial developmental age, is quite important.
But can the protests force the government's hand?
I do think that what these sorts of protests do is they are a challenge to the state. They are a reminder, a postcard from the very poor and from the very angry of what is happening on the ground. And what you do when you receive something in the mail, you do well to read it.
Jamin, meanwhile, is optimistic. Prices will improve soon.
Given the fact that fuel prices came down sharply in August, and are likely to fall further in September. And given that Ukraine has now started shipping food back abroad, exporting to Middle East and other countries, food prices could also start coming down.
Ironically, COSATU, which initially called for the protests, is an alliance partner with the ruling African National Congress Party, which has been in power since 1994. Vicky Stark for VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. We are at VOA Upfront on Facebook, on Instagram. We are also on Twitter. You can also connect with us on YouTube, where you can watch our videos at VOA Africa. Until next time, goodbye, everyone.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.